Today is Thursday. It is April 19th, 2018. It's 11:14 in the morning. I'm John Williams. This is The Mincing Rascals, a weekly podcast we record at the studios at WGN Radio. Listen to me weekdays on WGN from 1 to 3 and on Saturdays from 10 a.m. till noon.
I'm Steve Bertrand, the host of the Wintrust Business Lunch on 720 WGN.
I'm Patty Vasquez, and you can listen to my show 11 p.m. to 2 a.m. Monday through Friday. It's pretty late on The Patty V Show.
I'm Scott Stantis, editorial cartoonist for the Chicago Tribune and creator of the comic strip Prickly City and co-host of the Prickly City podcast right here on WGN Plus.
And I'm Eric Zorn, the non-sanctimonious columnist from the Tribune. I run Wednesdays, Fridays, and Sundays.
Do I need to ask anything about that? Or are we okay?
I'm just like, I'm contrasting myself with James Comey.
Okay. We'll
get... A couple of tall...
I always have a start to this podcast, and then you always derail it.
It's a couple of tall guys in a blue blazer. That's what that is.
Do you think that he's sanctimonious, James Comey?
Yes.
Sure he is. That's a stupid question. Who cares? Does that matter? Does that take away from the, say, truth of or validity of?
I am still annoyed with him for the way he handled the whole Hillary Clinton matter. I'm annoyed.
No, it's true.
And the fact that he's now saying that he would not do it otherwise.
Absolutely.
In retrospect, he blew that. He got out of his lane.
You know why he said that, right? You know why he still says that? Because it wasn't about the outcome of the election. It was about the integrity of the FBI. And if he made... And he needed to announce both of those investigations.
No.
Otherwise, after the election... then it would appear as though the FBI took a side.
But his job is not to protect the appearances of the FBI. His job is to protect the Constitution.
He said that it would crumble. The Justice Department and the FBI would crumble.
And how's that working out for him? I mean, the FBI is now under an incredible fire.
Yeah.
They just, you know, they do investigations all the time. They don't come out and wring their hands when they don't prosecute someone. And they don't, 10 days before an election, when he's just doing a routine look through this email that they discovered, he makes this big announcement. I mean, as though his job is not just to do justice. His job is to run that department and do justice, you know, fight crime the way the FBI does. His job is not to, like, wet his finger and put it to the political wind.
If you think of it, it's a remarkable feat because he's managed to be loved by both sides of the political divide and loathed by all of us at the same time. Right?
It's quite true, yeah.
I mean, the Republicans loved him when he was on Hillary Clinton. They hated him with Trump. And now, I mean, he has brought up all this Clinton stuff
again. They even hated him before the election when he said that, in fact, there was nothing wrong about the email servers. I mean, he had it both ways even before the election. And, you know, Steve, one thing that was pointed out in that Stephanopoulos interview was that 2 weeks before the election, she, if you believe the polls, had a double-digit lead.
All of us were operating in a world where the polls were showing that Donald Trump had no chance.
I forgot what a done deal her victory was. Didn't happen.
Well, she still had a lead even going into that day. I mean, the thing was...
She had a lead after that day.
Do you think it cost her the election?
Do you think Comey cost her the election?
Absolutely. And I think a lot of people didn't vote at all. You know, Michigan and Wisconsin, you know how many people left the top of the ballot empty? And who knows that? And those are two determining states as well. There were over 20,000 in Michigan who left the top of the ballot empty.
You want to say anything about this, Scott Stantis?
Well, no, it's always funny because it just seems that the discussion always comes, well, Hillary, I mean, it always seems to come back to that.
I know.
But you know, he did come out with this book, and when the book came out, it was seen as Comey versus Trump, and the way it's worked for him is probably not the way he designed it. Where it is, it's all this Democratic stuff has resurfaced and all the bad things he did over the summer, you know, to where now he's really doesn't have a constituency.
Well, the thing that he put these political considerations into play when that's not his job.
Correct.
And that's what infuriates me about his answers and why the sanctimony about them. Like, I've got to protect the FBI's reputation. No, you don't.
Mm-mm.
You don't have to protect their FBI. You have to do your job.
And stay off the late night shows making jokes about the breakup that won't end. You know, he did that
is weird.
With
yeah.
Trump. That doesn't serve him either.
And since then, you know, of course, I've taken his side in his fights with Trump. I mean, Trump clearly got rid of him because he was afraid of the investigation into the Russia matter. And now it's backfired on Trump.
Have you read the book? Do you have the book?
I have not read the book. I've read the excerpts of the book. No. I don't buy these books. I don't feel like I need to after I've read all the excerpts and seen the interviews. Why am I going to spend $30?
Okay, I've started to read the book, and I will lend it to you if you like. But my point is this. The reviews all spoke about the color of Trump's hair, the size of his hands, all of the silly and salacious stuff, right? The PP tapes. And it wasn't about the stuff that really matters. The reviews are picking up on that. And yet the reviewers will tell you, I haven't been able to finish the book yet, that it's not just about that. In fact, that's a very small slice of this book. It's about the larger arc of his career.
That's on him and his editors. You've covered a lot of books. You know a lot of editors. Mm-hmm. They know it's going to get. They know it's going to get the publicity.
So you think he should have cut out that really
Absolutely.
Good stuff?
Absolutely. It served him.
It is
poorly.
Kind of ironic, though, that we're all on his case about talking about the length of Trump's ties and the size of his hands. You know, like this discredits him. It makes him like a less serious person when every single day the president of the United States is tweeting out these playground insults.
I know that, but is it the place of James Comey? Sanctimonious James Comey to comment on that or even point it out.
He's now a public. He's a private person now. He's not. He doesn't have.
I'm just wondering.
I didn't have a problem. As I understand, he describes the hue of Trump's skin and talks about the length of his ties and says that his hands are actually normal size.
Yeah, I mean, okay.
Is that all these horrible details? No. So
Michael Cohen has 10 clients now that we're in Trump land.
Ten.
Three. I thought it was three.
New York Times says today 10.
Okay. Wow.
Seven of whom he advises, and we don't know who they are. Three of them were named in federal court this week. You know Donald Trump, this Elliot Broidy, the Republican donor, and gasp, Fox TV pundit Sean Hannity. Hannity's the most watched cable news program in America. He had 1.8 million viewers before the election and 3.2 million now. Cohen has been a guest on Hannity's show many times. The two both defend the president. Hannity defends Cohen sometimes, but he never discussed or disclosed his client relationship.
I may have given him $10 one day.
Yeah,
I may have tossed him $10. I have an attorney. It costs more than $10. Eric Zorn, why does this story matter?
The story about Hannity?
Or does it?
Well, of all the things that one has to be dismayed about Sean Hannity, this is a small one to me. I mean, I don't feel like, you know, this guy, that Cohen is his main lawyer for any major issues, as far as we know. Hannity has already compromised all the way up and down on this. He is basically an advisor to Trump. Someone said he's the shadow chief of staff.
Well, I would say arguably we have two people in the room here who host their own shows. Mm-hmm. You don't say that you're a journalist, although you certainly cover things and do a great job. But I'm curious what your thoughts are. I'm more curious about that than what mine are.
I think he had an ethical standard to disclose that this guy that's on with him is also a client.
Correct.
We do that all the time. I mean, it's a throwaway line. And if he had done that, this goes away. There's nothing wrong about having Michael Cohen on or you being his client. But you just have to say it.
Yeah,
that's all.
That's true. I'm just saying. You're right, John. I'm not defending it. I'm just saying, of all the things that bother me about Sean Hannity, this is a small one.
Okay, so how about this weird possibility? I think it's probably almost certainly not likely.
Oh, I know what you're about to say, and I think it is possible.
What?
Go ahead.
No, you tell me.
I think that, look, there's a reason that you have Michael Cohen as your attorney. The same reason Donald Trump did, the same reason that Broidy had. And that is because you have a woman problem, and he's there to fix it. He is the fixer.
That's not what I was going to say.
No, don't.
I like what you said, though.
We're all focusing on, and Hannity's insisting and saying, yeah, I might have given him $10, right?
I never gave him a retainer, never received an invoice, never paid any fees. You know, I might have handed him $10. I definitely want you attorney-client privilege on this, something like that.
He was a client. They had a business relationship. What if it wasn't Hannity paying Cohen, but Cohen paying Hannity?
For access?
I don't know.
In trade to have that kind of exposure on Fox News?
I don't know that he needed to pay him to get access on his show.
Well, then why was he paying him?
I don't know. I'm just saying it's a possibility no one else has brought up. Maybe
there's
it's
something about this nexus between Trump and Cohen and Hannity. Like you said, the shadow chief of staff, this something that is bigger than Cohen. It's about Hannity and Trump. That's the thing that troubles me.
What troubles me are the people that watch Hannity and report what he says as though what he's doing is factual and journalism. I always try to make the distinction that I'm a talk show host and our news is at the top of the hour and bottom of the hour. Those are the journalists like Steve, like Rob Martier, like all the news people. And then we have a conversation and share our opinions. But even Hannity has put himself out there. He goes back and forth and says he's a journalist and then he says he's a talk show host. But this is, you know, he should have said something. He needed to disclose that.
It's just fun. Mostly it's just fun, the gasp in the courthouse, and it's just...
Well, I love the, was it the Onion that had the headline, people shocked to discover that Fox News less than unbiased?
Exactly.
Well, I'm glad that you pointed that out, though, Steve Bertrand, because I think I'm the one to always wave the, it doesn't really matter, it's just fun to talk about flag. I think the Stormy Daniels thing falls into that camp. I think there's a lot of things that we get critical about the president about that, however entertaining, aren't really consequential.
Oh, I think the Stormy Daniels story is more than that.
Stormy Daniels is a wedge into it was the foot in the door of Michael Cohen's apartment or condo, wherever it was they raided his law offices. That was what I think got them the ability to get in there, and who knows what they found.
Okay.
She may end up.
Yeah, no, I couldn't agree more. I think that the just paying off and. Someone who might be embarrassing, and I think you're right. I think Cohen
you
is.
Get to pay, if you we've had this problem, conversation before, Scott. You get to pay people off who are embarrassing. You can sign a contract that says you won't talk about this, and I'll give you $1 million. You can.
It's
do
how
that.
You do it, though, and where that comes from.
Yes.
I want to talk about a different subject.
This wasn't on. This wasn't even on the show.
Thanks, Eric.
Such a Zorn right there, wasn't it? Because this 5 minutes of chatter about what we're going to talk about, and then
there are 23 women in the United States Senate. 70%, Lori Kellum points out in the Chicago Tribune, 70% of mothers in America work. Among them are Tammy Duckworth, Illinois' new mom senator. Senator Duckworth has asked that she be allowed to bring her daughter, M-A-I-L-E, I've heard it pronounced and now I don't know how to do it. Miley?
I'm going Miley.
It's going to be a lifetime of that.
Miley Pearl onto the Senate floor. To vote as a U.S. senator.
Well, she can't vote.
You have to be on the Senate floor. So her proposal to be on the floor might actually come to the Senate this week. To be decided are issues such as can men bring their newborns to the floor? Can you change a diaper while there? Can you breastfeed while there? Plenty of senators don't like the idea, but none of them want to be on the wrong side of this one. Sure. What do you think?
What do I think? I mean, it seems like a no-brainer to let the baby on the floor. I don't know. I certainly wouldn't be changing the diaper there. I think that you can have
breastfeed
a moment
on the floor.
I think there's been crying and diaper changing on the floor of the Senate for a long time.
Thank you, Marco Rubio.
They've been begging for the breastfeeding, but no, I don't. I would not breastfeed, but I think that she should be able to have that opportunity. It's gonna. Yeah, I don't see why. I mean, you know, discreet about it.
Isn't the House of Representatives, they already allow babies on the floor. They already have this rule.
Well, they've been confronted with it probably before. This is the first senator to give birth while
Duckworth,
in office.
Was Duckworth a congresswoman?
She must
have Congress
been.
In Congress when she had her first child? Because I don't even know how old her first
child was. Yeah,
this
is number three for her.
No, two.
The Senate's funny because if you're in the galley, you can't even have a pencil and paper. If you're just a spectator, there are a lot of rules. There's a lot of conformity to the Senate. It's not the people's house. It's the Senate.
Well, what I like about this is that she just did it. I mean, this is just, this is where we are today, and the our existence confronts these old rules, and the old rules need to change, and so mm-hmm. they just did.
They
We've
have to
just
change.
Changed.
They have to, because you could imagine a situation where she tries to bring the baby onto the floor, and then they block her, or they eject her from the Senate, or and it just turns into a major issue that nobody wants.
But it just strikes me as grandstanding in that. Hate me for this. I don't mean everything I'm about to say.
Don't do it.
But she has a husband. She could have a caretaker for the day.
She's got staff who could hold. She has to go in and vote.
Thank you. Not every mom has to be at work with the baby all the time. So I'm not exactly sure that it's imperative that she be there.
This is symbolic. This is symbolic. They're not going to be aromatic diapers being flung around the floor of the Senate. This is a symbolic gesture. She'll probably bring the child onto the floor a couple times and then realize that this is not a way to get work done. You've got staff. You've got a spouse.
You know what this reminds me, though, is that remember John McCain couldn't vote on some issues that were so critical because while he was conscious and able to think, he couldn't physically get to the Senate chambers, and it doesn't allow televoting. You should be able to vote from a distant place if you're a member of the United States Senate.
No.
Why are you people? Why not?
Because I was just talking about this with the group a couple of minutes ago. You need to be present with others, and it's supposed to be a collegial body, and you should be able to exchange views with, I'm not done yet, with the people next to you. And
but he was done with you.
I know. Well, no. It's just, poor Scott. It looked like he had something to say.
No, it seems to me, we live in a digital age. You can watch stuff. I mean, we're being watched right now. The cameras are gone. At some point, we could have been watched.
Our shows are streamed all the time.
You can watch and participate, and I have no issue with being remote voting. I think it's preposterous.
I think this is different in this, and to that, you know, the way they can, you know, they come up with policy, the way they did argue these things, debate them, whether even maybe it's even the idea that, you know, there's that last minute, hey, look, we'll make a deal. I mean, it's all part of being in part of the process.
Oh, it would be better to be there. Look, you can be indicted, you can be arraigned, you can be on trial and not be physically in a courtroom. That to me is where physical presence should really matter. And yet, not all. Who was it? It's this. Who's the guy that was sexually assaulting all of the U.S. gymnasts? Some of his proceedings were done in places different than where the women were actually testifying.
Dr. Larry Nassar.
Exactly.
Nassar.
Thank you. Ding, ding, ding. I'll edit that in so it'll look like I remembered the name. Mm-hmm. Okay, so yes or no to Tammy Duckworth, babies on the Senate floor.
Absolutely.
Yes, she's not going to have the baby there all the time. I mean, this is to have the opportunity to have the choice. Absolutely.
Yes, the symbolism is correct.
Mm. I would have a writer about against diapers and screaming, but yes.
It is the coldest April on record.
Second coldest, I think.
And we've had some of the longest games in memory. Anthony Rizzo, who makes $11 jillion a year, or will, said we ought to shorten the baseball season to 140 games and maybe clip it on this end. Scotty, what do you think?
I couldn't agree with that more. Yeah. I always thought when they expanded to, what is it, 164 now? I thought that was
162.
That's too long, because it also means the postseason goes into, you know, instead of Mr. October, we have Mr. December now. It's crazy.
Yeah, almost.
Well, that's because they extended the playoffs, not the regular season. They extended playoff rounds.
More teams in there and more games in the rounds. And I think that's the problem. It's not do the players or fans care. It's what do the owners want to do, because they're the ones that, who's going to lose money? Rizzo will. But the owners are the one that you're asking to take a 18% haircut.
Go ahead.
No, I was going to say this stopped being a game for the average man about 20 years ago. So whether or not people can go by and have their butts in the seats, I think, is almost irrelevant to where it is now. I mean, it's all about the corporations own the seats. If people aren't there, it doesn't matter. The corporations have already bought the seats.
I don't think the number of games is the issue so much as it is the time of year when some of these games are played. And, you know, Scott's point about the World Series extending into November now, and these games that we've been trying to play in April. I mean, the conditions at Wrigley, was it last Saturday when the Cubs came back? I mean, that was like almost Little League baseball, some of it. Their fingers were too cold to play.
Badly played baseball.
And so you, they have the fan experience is pretty bad. And I don't feel that bad for the fans because they choose to go out there. They choose
feel
to
bad
buy
for
tickets.
Me. I was at that game, Eric.
I barely.
I left
three
in the
innings.
Third inning.
Yeah. top or bottom?
It wasn't the skybox heated, John.
I do not sit with regular people.
Yes, what is going on here? So I mean the number of games, but I, you know, if they wanted to play a bunch more doubleheaders and shorten the length of the season time wise, but I think Rizzo's basically right. The season is kind of too long,
and I don't think the fans. Like, if you said going into the season it's going to be 140 versus 160, would you feel cheated? You would in the NFL if we said instead of 16 games it's going to be 12 games or something like that. You really want those games. There's so few. Baseball has enough games.
You know, if another issue, I'm sorry, Patty.
That's okay.
If you know, the White Sox were playing in Oakland last night, and weather was pretty nice yesterday afternoon.
Six-hour game.
Nobody there.
It was a six-hour game.
But I tuned in during the late innings, and there was nobody there.
Yeah.
The Cubs opened up at Miami. There was nobody there. Yeah. I mean, so it's not
even
just
Miami,
about the weather. Yeah.
I will say this, with the dismal start that the Cubs and the Sox are having, we're going to need all 162 of these games.
To come back?
Please.
Or to get further behind.
And of course, the purists are going to complain that then you can't compare statistics like home runs, wins, stolen bases, all those important statistics in baseball is all about its stats.
Yeah.
All of them go out the window if you shorten the season.
Although Babe Ruth played in a shorter season too. I mean,
that's why Maris had the asterisk for so long.
And yeah, it's right. One season. It's, I mean, has anyone done a comparison to what it was like in April last year here?
Oh, this does seem very reactionary.
Right.
Right. But I think. And you shouldn't go down this road because we're talking about weather, not climate. Mm-hmm. But I think this is the future.
Mm-hmm.
I think the weather's going to be more volatile.
Mm-hmm.
Climate change and global warming if they're the same thing. Climate change doesn't mean warmer weather all the time. It means more volatile weather. It means colder colds and higher highs and more frequency in between
storms,
the two. Yeah, absolutely. And that we're having.
Maybe they can start moving the World Series to warm weather cities like they do with the Super Bowl.
Oh, have a designated
or dome stadiums.
Well, you've got seven games, though, so you're going to play all seven in Atlanta, or you're going to go 3-3.
All right, I withdraw my suggestion.
Well, but you just mentioned someone. We should just dome Wrigley Field.
No.
Well,
no,
it is pretty funny that Wrigley Field, all the money they spent to redo it, and they didn't put a roof on that, and that the Minnesota Twins, built a beautiful new stadium outdoors in Minnesota. They play those. There is a foot of snow on the ground today in Minneapolis.
An April blizzard.
Any other topics that you guys want to talk to me about?
Yeah, well, I wanted to mention the news that broke this morning that Dorothy Brown has thrown her hat into the ring for mayor of Chicago. This adds an interesting wrinkle. And
Scott, she might be listening to this.
I know. Yes, have some peace.
Respect. I know. She's going to ring me up for my gene tax.
She is a pay to play. She is, she's got all kinds of ethical issues. And yet she wins for office all the time because, and I've been told that she works the black churches in Chicago. Every Sunday she's out there, she has a really strong constituency that really likes her, and that's how she keeps getting reelected despite all the ethical clouds that hang over her. We chuckle about her entering this race, but she does have support, and she could be a factor. I don't think she could win. I don't think there's any way she could win, but she could draw votes away. Essentially, what's going to happen in this mayor's race, in my opinion, is that it's the first election is kind of like a primary because the top two will move on unless one person gets 50%. The entry of Dorothy Brown into this race makes it more likely, marginally more likely that Rahm Emanuel will not get 50% of the vote in that first time, like he didn't last time. He had to have a runoff against Chuy Garcia last time. So this is although it's kind of silly news, I think it does matter.
When she does siphon off those vital Willie Wilson votes.
Oh, boy.
Willie Wilson has a constituency, too. It's small. What, did he get 5% last time?
If it comes down to Rahm Emanuel and who would be the next best contender?
Oh,
if we cut the pie more ways, who has the second biggest
the
piece
next
of pie?
Best or the most likely? My guess would be on Paul Vallis at this point.
Yeah.
But, a lot of campaigning still to go on that. And are you going to move on? Because I have no other thing I want to throw in. On the same line, Sam McCann, downstate legislator, has thrown his hat into the ring as the Conservative Party candidate for governor.
So the key there, right, is we don't know if Jeannie Ives is a fan or not a fan.
I haven't heard yet. This is all breaking like this morning.
He's very pro-union. He's a very pro-union, socially conservative Republican. It's an odd combination, but that may or may not, the union thing may or may not be a deal breaker with the Ives folks. But she had some support from some
the
unions as well.
The Rauner folks have unloaded on him this morning already.
Really?
They said it was politics for personal gain and things like that. But J.B. Pritzker thinks it's a good idea.
Yeah. Sure, absolutely. Yeah. Yeah. Anybody draw those votes away, splintering the votes.
He's got a downstate district that's got a lot of state workers in it, which is why he's pro-union. But he's socially very conservative, and he's going to attract some of Jeannie Ives' supporters. So if Jeannie Ives gets behind him, Jeannie Ives is still really mad at Rauner.
Bumped into each other at a pub.
Yeah, they barely even spoke to each other.
And there was something to be made about whether or not they're going to sort of embrace each other.
They can't agree whether or not they've spoken.
She remains furious at him for saying that she, Jeannie Ives, is Mike Madigan's favorite Republican, which is
those are crazy
ads.
She has no right.
That was worse. That was worse than the lies she told
her
about
ad
him.
Was the worst. Her ad in the history of Illinois will be remembered in the top three. Huh?
Well, it was a political misfire. That ad was the one we're talking about with a guy in a dress.
But
and
it
so
got
on.
Her so much attention. It definitely elevated her to.
I'm sorry. This was on the heels of her incredible performance in the one and only debate that she and Rauner had. She did great. She cleaned up the floor with the guy. And so coming out of that, and then right on the heels of that, they post this ad.
So we're doing Clinton Comey and Ives Rauner. We're still arguing over
John.
Please, I'm still getting over Johnson from the
John
Chicago
has lost
Tribune.
Control of his own podcast.
Right. Steve, was there another topic you wanted to throw in? Because I wanted to get to Patty's notion that cops in Chicago should live in the dangerous districts they police.
Okay, just only quickly, just to make it of note, Joe Berrios is out as Democratic Party chairman, and Tony Preckwinkle in.
And do you like that idea? Should the police off? Should we give? And it was generous, I thought, the financial incentive to police officers in Chicago to move into some of these more troubled districts.
But only two took him up on this offer.
Only two took
over
him
6 months.
Up on it.
And the thing is, why are we not recruiting people from those neighborhoods to be in the fire department and the police
there,
department?
Be in the department.
Because they know their own neighborhood. I mean, there is something when you have an investment in your community. Rather, I mean, look, there are people. I live in a cop and firefighter neighborhood. I live in Jefferson Park, grew up in Norwood Park. A lot of my friends are on the police force and are firefighters. And, they want to go home. They want to live as far away from the neighborhoods that they serve rather than move into them. They're not going to be moving into Gage Park or they're not moving into Englewood. They're not going to do that.
We're going to do our recommendations now. Steve, you got to get going. What is your recommendation this week?
So this week I've been watching a series. It was on Channel 4 in England, but it's on Netflix now, called Southcliffe. And I don't know if I want to recommend it. It's torturous. It was about a serial or a spree killer in England in this fictitious town, which I don't know that they have these. So, but it was done in a very non-linear way. So each day, it was four episodes, you would be reintroduced to the shooting after meeting one of the new victims. And so it was told in a very interesting way. And in the end, it ended up being about this community that had a chance to confront honesty decades before and failed to. And because of that, perhaps they were paying for the sins with these killings. So if you can deal with seeing people in extreme grief... And there was a lot of it. Really, it was unfortunate to watch that. But the show is Southcliffe.
Southcliffe, interesting.
Steve Burt, and what network is
Netflix.
That on? Netflix. Patty.
If I could do a plug and a recommendation, I am going to be at the Metropolis Theater in Arlington Heights performing Lipstick Mom. Would love to see everybody Friday night at 7:30. And my recommendation is, I don't know if you guys did this because I was not here last week, but Wild Wild Country on Netflix is a documentary on this cult in Oregon in 1981. I had no idea about this. It's fascinating. And you watch these thousands of people. They bought 63,000 acres of land in Oregon to really build their own community, build this town. And it was one of the largest poisoning cases in our country, the largest wiretapping case in the world, they were saying, by the FBI. I mean, the FBI wasn't wiretapping. This cult was. Fascinating story. I binge watched the entire thing. It was crazy.
And the name of that is?
Wild Wild Country on Netflix.
No kidding. What up, Eric? What are you eating, reading, liking, watching?
Mary Schmeek really liked that. She recommended it in her column this week, too. So I'm going to have to check that out. I wanted to amplify on a recommendation I had last week. I asked people to read The Stairwell, the new article in the Chicago Magazine about the killing of Commander Paul Bauer. And I read it again myself. I ended up writing a column about it on Wednesday because it has been ripped by the mayor, by the police superintendent, by the police union as this terrible story, this horrible thing that happened. I sort of tried to, my column for Wednesday, I sort of threaded the needle between that and said that there was some excellent journalism that went on there, as well as some things that they probably shouldn't have said. My recommendation are two apps that I found that I use all the time as a Chicagoan. One is Spot Hero to find parking places, like in lots. And the other one is Park Chicago, the app that you use to pay for your on street parking. And I can't believe that I still run into people who don't have these apps.
It's so funny because I only have Spot Hero on my phone. And when people find out that you don't have these apps on your phone, they get mad at you.
Yeah,
like, Park Chicago? You don't have Park Chicago?
They go, oh, my God, why don't you? Oh, it's like you didn't vote or I don't know something.
Do you never use a meter? You never use a meter
I do.
Spots?
I always walk up to the pay box and stand there in the cold.
Yeah,
and
I hate sometimes it. Sometimes John's driver just goes around the block.
Yeah, sure. Just another lap.
Yeah.
No, Park, I agree. Park Chicago is great.
I don't have either one because I don't have a car.
That's right.
Yeah, right. Oh, but you should still get it. Oh, my God, you don't have it? You're a terrible person, you idiot.
I'm saying you would like it if it's convenient. No,
very good apps.
It's one of those things I got to do. You got a recommendation, Scott?
I do. In fact, it's shameless self-promotion. I'm sitting down with a conversation with Ted Rall, the tremendous Pulitzer Prize finalist cartoonist. He's done a series of graphic novel biographies. In this one, he's Francis, the People's Pope. And we are having a conversation at the Seminary Co-op Bookstore. That's at 5751 South Woodlawn Avenue in Chicago. And it's from 6 to 7 this Tuesday. And we would love for people to come and enjoy and sit down and listen to a conversation between a couple of lunkhead cartoonists. It might be interesting.
Speaking of Pulitzer Prizes, congratulations, right, to the Chicago Tribune for picking up more Pulitzer Prizes. Do I not understand? Or was that just a nomination?
We were finalists.
Finalists?
For the Property Tax Series.
Yeah, the Jason Grotto
Jason
thing
Grotto
with ProPublica.
With ProPublica, yeah.
And so you did not win the Pulitzer, or you are nominated for the Pulitzer?
We were finalists. There were three finalists in each category.
And so we don't know who the winner is yet.
No. They announced the winner, and then they announced the two runners-up.
Oh, I see. And so it was not the...
Basically, they said, you were so close.
So close. Well, I still think that's quite a nod. I mean, what an important, well-done, fascinating series. It is why we need and have great journalism.
Amen.
My recommendation is a book that isn't so much for me, but might be for you. It's called Make Your Kid a Money Genius, Even If You're Not. Beth Kobliner wrote it. And she is a New York Times bestselling money writer. If you've got kids and you're like, have questions about allowance, it's from kids 3 to 23. So she goes through, should you give your kids cash allowance or credit an account that they can use and have savings in? Real nuts and bolts questions. Two, when your kid graduates from college, should you let them stay back in the house and save money?
Yes.
And not everybody agrees. Yeah. And she should you have insurance on your smartphone? Yes or no?
When
you buy your $600 and they go, oh, for $60 more, you can get insurance. Should you or should you not? She answers all of these.
I want that book.
What's the answer on the smartphone thing?
Smartphone is almost certainly no. Do not buy the smartphone insurance.
Well, almost all these insurance things that you buy at the checkout are bad deals. But are you going to be interviewing this author for your radio program?
In fact, the podcast is at WGNradio.com.
But so you've already done it.
Yeah.
So we can have a link off our page to that interview, because I'd love to hear that.
We will do that.
I need that book because my son, who is a wonderful human being, and I love him dearly.
No,
this is actually, it's wonderful, but also I'm trying to figure it out. Anytime you give him money, he donates all of it. We were in D.C. and he was messaging me asking if he should ask people for change.
Wow.
So he could donate money to like the Smith, because you know they don't charge to the Smithsonian.
Wait, did you raise him right?
I know, but I also I would like him to be frugal as well. I want him to be judicious in how he.
Oh, yeah, stop giving away all the damn money.
Right. He also does. Maybe if he was earning it, he would feel like some for me, some for them.
Relationship.
Yes.
Patty, she recommends five charities the kids could donate their money to, and number one is Heifer International. Her list. Patty Vasquez, thanks for coming.
Thank you for having me.
Eric Zorn, Scott Stantis, Steve Bertrand. That's Bob Ferguson, our engineer today. The Mincing Rascals are produced by Elif Garris. I'm John Williams. We'll drop another podcast on you next week.
Subscribe to the Mincing Rascals podcast on iTunes or the Google Play Music Store. You can also listen online on the WGN Plus app or WGNradio.com. Just click on the WGN Plus tab. The Mincing Rascals podcast is a presentation of the WGN Plus Podcast Network. You can also catch highlights every Saturday from 11 to 11:30 a.m. on The John Williams Show on WGN Radio.